listen to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Rogue Startups. This is 163. Mr. Craig, how are you doing today?
Man, I'm doing good. We have been all over the map with trying to record this episode, Dave. I think this is the fourth time we've tried to record this.
Yeah, it's been a small challenge for sure. But it's been a cluster. Why? Why have we had trouble recording this episode? Do tell, Craig.
It's entirely my fault.
Well, not just that, but I think there's a good excuse here. Like, this was a pretty hilarious excuse. Like, where were you?
Yeah, so we are on winter break right now, and we traveled to Marrakesh, Morocco last week. And it was my first time in Africa, my first time to Morocco. And it was really eye-opening, like a really interesting experience and trip and stuff, and for the kids definitely too. We tried to record on like Wi-Fi that is worse than I have at my house, which is amazing. and it just didn't work. So now we are on our second part of our trip. We're in Barcelona for 5 days, and I have like fiber in my Airbnb. So it's amazing.
And yes, I'm traveling as well, although it's not nearly as exotic as Marrakesh. I'm in Pasadena, California this week.
And you're up at like 6 a.m. to record this, right?
I got up at 6 a.m. to record this, and and I'm glad I had a chance to actually get a shower and and put myself together. Yeah, put my face on, as it were.
Yeah,
because otherwise, when I woke up, I was like, oh, oh, oh.
Yep.
Something different today, I guess.
That's right. It's always fun to travel and eye-opening and get perspective and stuff like that, but obviously challenging in some ways too, like this.
How did your kids like Morocco?
Overall they liked it. We rode camels one day, and
that's a popular one. Yeah.
Yeah. It was really cool. The biggest thing that I think all of us kind of took an issue with is, there's like motorbikes and scooters everywhere, right? Like there's no cars because the streets are so small,
right,
that everyone uses motorbikes. And like they just go zooming past. They don't care about anything. And it was kind of challenging for everybody to be like, you know, always watch where you're going and watch what's coming towards you and all this kind of stuff. It was kind of unnerving a little bit. And for me, the biggest thing was the pollution and the air quality. It was the first time I've been somewhere that I was like, it's not safe to live here, like because of this. Like it was really, really, really bad.
Yeah, I can totally see that. The first time I went to India, that was the first experience I really had. Well, no, that's not true. When I was down in Central America, there were lots of fires that were going on, where everybody was doing open fires to cook and heat their house and stuff. So yeah, there was just tons and tons of wood smoke everywhere all the time. And that was the same in India. But then add on top of that, in the major cities, you have all of these vehicles that are there. And yeah.
Totally unregulated in terms of emissions and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like choking. You just walking outside and you're like, you just get assaulted in the senses there. So yeah, it's a very different experience. I'm surprised that you didn't say the food. So if I have a picky eater, and so it's taken a long time to kind of get her into eating things that are different.
Yep.
It doesn't really matter what they are, that they're different. They're just different, and that's the problem. And so, you know, going out to restaurants, going to different states, you know, this can be a challenge. Now, once we introduce her to something and she likes it, oh my God, you can't keep her away from it. And, you know, but there's always that first contact that you're kind of like, well, how's this going to go? Because there were definitely times that it would be not necessarily a positive experience. And they're like, I don't want to come back here.
No. I mean, so my son is 6 and he is super picky, and he didn't really eat anything. he was just coming off being sick. Which I think the reason I was so sensitive to the air quality thing is he had this cough when we left. And they got down there and the cough got worse. And like, he was a kind of,
oh, yeah.
He spent like about 2/3 of a day in the hotel with him sleeping. just like a flu kind of thing that he was just getting over, and then the air quality was so bad, and then the cough came back and all this kind of stuff. But so he didn't have much of an appetite. So that didn't impact him as much, but yeah, he's totally picky and doesn't ever eat anything.
Well, I hope he's adjusted to life in Annecy and isn't just sitting there having cheese sandwiches all the time.
Yeah, he's pretty French at this point.
Okay, good.
So yeah, man, what's new?
Well, so with Recapture this week, we have been pushing integrations, and we're getting close to the finish line. I'm kind of excited about it, actually. Yay. We got a CartHook integration done. We have a CrateJoy integration done. And we've got three of them left, which sounds like a lot, but these last three build on the previous two. So I think they're going to be done by the end of this week.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
That's really great.
So I'm just blown away. You know, Mike has done a great job on that. Mike's the guy that's developing for Recapture. And, you know, we've had some other stuff that he's had to work on in between here, some customer issues and things like that. But yeah, we're gonna make it. It's imposed a March 1st deadline, and I think it's going to happen. So that's pretty exciting. You know, when software ships on time, that feels kind of rare.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Yeah. So that's been positive. And there's been some reasonable growth this month in Recapture, which I'm excited about.
Yeah.
And the plugins are still humming along. I hired a new guy to help with the transition. So one of my senior devs after, God, how long has he been with me? 7 years, I think. No, 8 years. This is his eighth year. After 8 years, he wants to move on. Totally fine. I totally understand that. And I appreciate all of the time that he's put into the plugin there. And we're kind of coming to the end of his tenure. So I needed to hire somebody. And the hiring was kind of interesting this time. Like, very rarely have I had significant choice. So I go through my winnowing process, and there's always like somebody that just bubbles straight to the top. And everybody else just doesn't quite hold a candle to that one person. Yeah. Well, this time, I actually had three of them.
And these are all WordPress developers?
These are all WordPress developers. Mm. And I had a hard time choosing. I won't lie. So and I'm so glad that I had a choice this time. This was so rare. I actually got to the end. I had picked a guy, and it turned out that that guy said, okay, well, I've got to finish up this contract and then I'll be available. And it was like a few days. So I'm like, sure, that's fine. So I wait a week and I contact him again. Well, they've extended it, so I can't really do it until the end of February. And so I let it go for a couple more days. And I was about to, you know, contact him proactively and say, look, I can't wait. I got to go with one of these other guys.
Yeah.
And then he contacted me and said, yeah, if you want to move on, just move on. Wow. And I'm like, okay, great. So then I contacted the second guy, and he said yes. He was like super excited. Like, he said, this was the one that I really wanted of all the positions I was interviewing for. I'm like, oh my God, you're excited. You have enthusiasm. This is amazing.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. That's great, man. And they were both really good. And there was a third guy, but he begged off when I hadn't contacted him after a while, which was totally fine. That was my bad. You know, I won't say I screwed up. It's just sort of the way it worked out.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you've got that luxury of communication, and sometimes you just kind of have to wait. And I try to keep him in the loop as much as I can. But there's a point at which you're just saying the same thing over and over again. Well, I'm still waiting to hear.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, that guy just started this last week, and I did some onboarding, and he's now talking with my other senior developer, and they're working to come up to speed. So hopefully that works out. I liked, you know, he actually had major plugin experience, which is not an easy thing to find. You know, lots of people say, oh, I built this, you know, tiny little WordPress plugin that, you know, does a pop-up on a page, and you're like, great,
That's not the same thing as supporting whatever thousands of
users. Okay, so that took you what, 8 hours and you were done? Great, that's nice. But this guy had actually worked on, he had built some plugins with more substance and multiple ones, and also had done work on some other ones. And the other guy, the very first guy that I wanted, the reason I wanted him, he actually had major experience on three big plugins. Like, he was a contributor on their lists in the repository for those plugins. And I'm like, wow, okay. And, yeah, you know, I reviewed the stuff that he had done, and like, this guy clearly knew not the WordPress API, but, you know, not just the WordPress API, but like really how to structure a large plugin and deal with all these concerns and conflicts and just all the crap you get when you have a plugin, when you have a major plugin. And so I felt like he was the most qualified, with the other guy being second, just because the first guy really had so much more, so much bigger plugin experience. But, you know, I ended up getting the second guy and it worked out. So
where did you find these people to, like,
this was all Upwork.
Upwork. Wow. Really? That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And you know, it was funny because when I started out on my hiring binge there, I tweeted out and I said, just in case you're wondering, the candidate quality has not improved. And I showed this, GIF of, is it GIF or GIF? I always, you know,
I go back and forth.
I was hard, G for a long time. Now I'm soft G, and now I'm just confused. Anyway, so I had this animated GIF, and I, you know, showed somebody's eyes bleeding out. And it's funny, I didn't at Upwork on that tweet, but they obviously have a search going on for mentions of Upwork. Oh, so somebody actually tried to proactively reach out to me and say, if you can help, or, you know, I'm like, nah, I'm good. You just have some shitty candidates in there.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough, like, from their perspective, it's tough, right? I mean, to say, like, it's kind of like Flippa, right? It's the same problem they have to monitor and improve quality on those platforms is really tough, because, I mean, there's no filter that says, like, you have to interview with Upwork before you can post yourself as a candidate or whatever.
No, and they don't really do candidate vetting the way that, like, platforms like TopTal or Codeable.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So you're just not, you're getting a different caliber of person here. And that's okay. I mean, you know, I know you guys are trying to do something about it, but it's just, that's not what I go to Upwork for, you know. But there's certain things that I would like to improve on Upwork for sure. One of them being their damn filters. Like, if I say on a job posting that I want people from this geographic region, I don't want somebody halfway around the world applying for my job and for them to think that's what I'm looking for. Like, if I put a filter on, you should be able to say, this is a hard filter or this is a soft filter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in my case, it's a hard filter. I want that time zone overlap. So I don't really need somebody applying from China or India. It's just not going to work for me. It's not that I have problems with working with people from over there. It's that I don't want a 12-hour time difference.
Yeah, no. I hear you. Yeah. My biggest one, I sent this out on Twitter the other day. Oh no, it's been a couple weeks, I guess. My biggest one these days for hiring people on Upwork is average contract size, or like contracts over a certain amount. Like, if I'm hiring someone that all of their contracts are $200, they're going to suck. If I have people that have $10,000 contracts, they're going to be good. But that's not a filter.
Yeah. I mean, you can say sort of total amount made. You can say, have they made 10,000, 100,000 or whatever on Upwork, which is a weird filter. Why would I filter on, you know, what basically somebody's take home salary has been? That's, that's kind of strange.
Right.
But yeah, I agree. In fact, I will go through, and of course it's a manual process, but I will go through and look to see, have they had bigger contracts? Is it, you know, $200 jobs, fixed price here, fixed price there?
Yeah.
Or did they work for somebody for 12 months and make $35,000, you know?
Yep.
Those numbers make a difference. They absolutely do. I didn't realize that I had that filter, but as soon as you mentioned it, yes, I do actually check that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just an indicator of high quality people that stick around with an employer for a long time. Yeah, I mean, that's what you want. That's all that you want, right? Because you can teach them everything they need to know, basically. But if they're dependable and like a long-term player in someone else's world, then they probably will be in yours too.
Well, you would certainly hope.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the
it's
best
not a guarantee.
Upfront. Yeah, yeah, yeah. These people are in South America, is that right, typically?
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
So the guy that I just hired, he's actually a bit of a jet setter. So he's originally from Colombia, and he, when I was going through and messaging him, I asked him, you know, where he's located, because I was going to find out specifically what city he's in Colombia. If he's in a city that one of my other guys had worked at, I was going to suggest that they get together. But he said, oh no, I'm in France. And I'm like, what? Okay. I guess he's been traveling and he's hanging out there for now. And he said he's going to move to Miami.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, or Florida, maybe not Miami specifically, but he's coming to Miami or to Florida, and that's where he plans to stay for a period of time. He didn't know how long. I'm guessing he has to get a visa or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm like, okay, cool, sure, yeah, whatever. I don't really care as long as we've got some time zone. You know, I told him in the requirements, I said, I have to have time zone overlap. That's my thing.
Yep.
And as long as we've got that, we're good. So, yeah, I mean, with France, he's like, he overlaps in the morning right now. And if he moves to Miami, shit, we're practically on top of each other most of the day. So that's great.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, so we're going through a bit of like time zone overlap troubles right now with our like DevOps guy. So he's in California, which is 9 hours difference from us. And yeah. You know, DevOps is one of these things where like you don't need them that often, but when you need them, you really, really need them. if it was like a content writer or something like that, I'd be like, I don't really care because I don't do very much synchronous work with them. But with this guy, like we've just implemented all this like automatic deployment stuff, and like we've invested quite a bit in like DevOps and sysadmin stuff in the last 3 months probably for Castos. Mm-hmm. And now we're at the point where like we have questions for this guy, and he's absolutely fantastic, but like it's slowing us down a little bit because we're like, okay, we need to deploy this big change. It's different because of this reason or whatever. It involves something that other deployments haven't involved. We need to wait until 8 o'clock at night, our time, to deploy this. And I'm just like, this is not like how this should be, you know, because we have a unique advantage a little bit, well, a lot of it, with being like 6 hours ahead of the East Coast US, which is, you know, most all of our customers in the US, most, yeah. 70% at least, probably. But we have this huge time zone advantage that we can't take advantage of because our DevOps guy is there. So we're, I guess, call out for everyone listening. If you are a DevOps guy or know of a DevOps guy and would like to help, just, I mean, I don't know, a handful, a dozen hours a month maybe is all we need. Because we have everything set up now pretty much, but it's just like a little bit of fine-tuning and tweaking and maintenance and these kind of things. If anybody knows anybody, let us know, podcast@roguestartups.com. I'd love to get somebody in Europe or like our lead developers in South Africa. That works great because we're the same time zone most of the year, except for some daylight savings time. But yeah, man, I hear you. The time zone thing, if you don't have it nailed, is crippling to your speed.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I really liked about my recapture development setup here is that Mike is, he's in your time zone. He's in Central Europe time, Central European time. I think that's Spain, right? They're CET.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
right. Yep, that was him. Yep.
So anyway, he is, you know, online before me. He works in the morning. So when, you know, we've had a couple of times where shit has gone sideways at like 2-3 in the morning. He gets the notifications. He's already on them by the time I get up. I don't even, you know, I wake up, I find out there was an issue. There's already been a resolution and here's what he's done to fix it. So we don't ever have this again.
Yeah.
I love waking up to that.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, we look at like rolling out something big and you're just like, we have 6 hours to screw this up, you know, before 70% of our customers come online.
Right.
You know, it's not a huge deal. I don't know. Yeah. But I mean, other than that, things with the Castos team are going great.
Yeah. Danilo on our team, lives in Montenegro. I've got him on Upwork and yeah, it's been great, man. I think for most things, as you're kind of starting out like top of funnel looking, it's a good place to look. I mean, I've not used a service like TopTal or one of those really high end things. If I was hiring a senior developer, maybe I would, I don't know. But, anyways, yeah.
Yeah, I have minimal experience hiring on those. I know that friends of mine have actually gone and applied to them to try to get some contract work because they wanted to have some flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, apparently the process is pretty rigorous to get into those places. Like they put you through a ringer.
Yep.
And by the time you get to the end of the ringer, there's no necessarily guarantee of work, but at least at that point they vetted you. So then it just... Okay. You know, you're kind of in an Upwork situation at that point. You're just waiting for stuff to arrive that you want to apply for.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it definitely seems like a solid thing. But I totally agree with you on DevOps. You know, when you need them, you need them. You need them now. Yep. Yep. Shit is going bad, and you need to fix it immediately. And having that accessibility is good.
Yeah.
I definitely would want to have that. Although I also enjoy the fact that, you know, my guy is working while I'm peacefully sleeping and I wake up in the morning and things are just handled. So if you can get a situation like that, by all means, do it. But I don't know how you're going to get, you know, somebody from like Vladivostok to do that.
Yeah, I know. I don't know.
It's the only time zone that's going to be like matching what I've got now. So yeah,
right.
I don't know.
Right, right.
Kind of weird.
Yeah, and I guess the only other thing for us with Castos is, you know, it's been almost 2 years. I can't believe it. It'll be 2 years in May. So it's been like, whatever, 20 months since we launched. And we're kind of looking at like the next phase of the business and the app and customer base and all this kind of stuff a little bit, and saying like, how can we get more involved with our customers and move, I'll say like up, not up market in the type of people that we're servicing, but just get more involved in their podcast. So we're looking at some integrations, like you mentioned, Dave, and some ways for customers to monetize their podcasts, because they look at kind of where we are right now, and we're, you know, frankly, a commodity of sorts. You know, we're a very good commodity, I think, but for someone to switch to or from Castos to another player is troubling, but not like the end of the world. But kind of saying to myself and exploring some options of like, how can we go from that sentiment to like, this would really, really, really be horrible. It would screw up my podcast and my monetization strategy and all this kind of stuff if I had to leave Castos. And along with that, hopefully share in the upside of some of our customers monetizing their shows. So that's kind of the big picture that we're looking at here for the next, at least through the end of this year, which is crazy to say in February. But I'm pretty sure this is the right way to go. We have, I think, solid product market fit. We're growing at a steady pace. And now if we can add on top of that just more value to our customers, that will make them stickier and it will make, you know, our revenue go up, hopefully. So it's interesting to be looking at like another phase of the business already, but it feels like the right time. The technology is in place for what we have going now, and support is being managed well, all this kind of stuff, and kind of looking at like how to get into the next phase for the business. Yeah, so it can not move forward incrementally, but kind of exponentially.
Yeah. Which I think is a nice segue at this point into our topic today, which is something that Nathan Barry had posted on Twitter and wrote a very short blog article on it, which I was actually a little surprised that it was as short as it was.
Yeah, it was too.
Yeah, I was like, I was thinking he was going to like go into a long read to kind of thing. And then I'm like three paragraphs later, I'm like, whoa, okay, we're done. All right, that's cool. But it sparked some discussion, and it was about endurance. And we'll link to it in the show notes, of course, so that you can see the original source on this one. But the Twitter discussion that we saw about endurance and, you know, just how long do you suck it up and try to push through your business? Because there are stories of guys like Nathan where he was just grinding and grinding and barely making $3K a month, and now he's like worth millions. And, yep, you know, the endurance is what paid off here for him. But the question is endurance going to work for you? Should you be enduring? And at what point do you say, fuck it, this isn't working anymore, I need to stop? So that's what we wanted to talk a little bit more about today.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that it definitely, well, I'll say with the caveat of bootstrapping, if you're bootstrapping and having a tough time getting traction and growth. And I think for, I don't know, doing less than 10,000 a month, if you're not doing like 10% growth a month or 5% or something like that, you probably need to look at like, I don't know, your degree of product market fit and some things like that, you know, that we've talked about, because it's just like, well, it's a little bit of like opportunity cost. Like if you're doing this and it's not working out great, you probably should just go do something else. Cause like, if you're a smart driven resourceful person, you can kind of make anything work. This just might not be your cup of tea for any number of reasons. And yeah, I mean, I think how to realize that is really tough. And how to make that decision is really tough. I can say after saying what I just said, I can realize that you know, with Sales Camp, we don't have product market fit, and I probably should be doing something else. And I may at some point, I don't know, but we have, you know, kind of special reasons why I need that business to stick around at least and be somewhat successful. But I think if people don't have those kind of reasons, you need to look at like just, you know, your 40 hours a week and say, put those 40 hours towards something that can really work and has a lot of upside, I think. That's probably the other thing I would think about is like, if you're going to grind it out and persist for a business that can only do 10,000 a month, and then you think you'll hit some sort of cap, then you're probably setting yourself up to be disappointed later, because like you're going to go to all this work and then be left with like whatever, a capped out, you know, entity and resource that would be really disappointing, I think. Because the goal is like obviously do all this work up front to then have the easy life once you get to significant revenue and can build a team and stuff.
Yeah. And that's the problem is that, you know, the way that Nathan sort of put this article out there, it made it sound like all you need to do is just endure. All the best businesses endure. You know, it was all like sunshine and roses. And that's the part I didn't really like about it, is it didn't really sort of give a criteria to say, look, enduring is good. You need grit to survive. If you don't have that, your business isn't going to make it. But you should also have some exit criteria to say, if I'm not doing X by Y, then I'm quitting. And, you know, I'm not saying, you know, if I'm not doing $100,000 a month in 3 months, then I should quit. Well, that's not realistic, right? But if you could say, all right, in 2 years, if I'm not seeing 10% of growth a month for a certain number of months, or I can't leverage a single growth channel to make something happen in the business, then maybe it's time to exit.
That's really it, isn't it? Like the growth avenue. Like if you don't have a marketing channel after 2 years or whatever time you say, then your business isn't a business. It's like a fluke and leveraging your personal relationships and all this kind of stuff, right? I mean, like, because your business has to grow somehow. If you can't find that way for it to grow, then just fold up shop, sell it, give it away, whatever, and go do something else.
But you know, the thing that I want to emphasize is that if you're going to have this mentality of, I just got to grind it out, I have to endure, that's good. I think that's solid, but you should also have a plan to say, when am I going to evaluate that this is working or not working? And evaluate it against some hard criteria. Don't make it something fuzzy. Well, if the business is doing well, then I'll go, you know, well, what does that mean? You got to have some hard numbers on that. And this is the thing that I think is really difficult for us to do, is to put these things on there, because if you do that and you hit that criteria, then you're like, oh shit, you know, then loss and failure and like, oh my God, I didn't make this happen in this time frame. It's like, no, you didn't. But that's why you put this goal on here, is to give yourself an out if this isn't working, so you don't have to, you know, squander the opportunities that you have in front of you and move on to something else. I mean, this was one of the many things I probably should have done with Support Vine, but certainly having some customers would have helped as well. But in general, just have a solid plan. Like, how am I going to address this market? What channels am I going to use? Who is this product for? I hadn't defined any of that with Support Vine. Mm-hmm. And with the plugins here, you know, they're just humming along at this point. They're not my main focus. And, you know, it was when there was an observation at Big Snow, that, because this was an observation about me, I'll go ahead and share it. There was a guy who said, yeah, you know, you don't sound excited when you talk about the plugins. And I'm like, do I not sound excited? I guess I don't sound excited, because it's not my SaaS, right? It's not the thing that I was really pushing to have for a long time. It was just, they're there. And, you know, I think that's something else. Like, is that part of your exit thing? Do I want to be excited about this in a year, 2 years? And if you're not excited about that, is that part of your endurance and exit criteria? Or is it something that you can say, all right, I don't have to be excited about this. When I started the plugins, I never said, you know, WordPress is my passion. I've never said that, not once. And when I learned the plugins, I had no real experience in WordPress aside from standing up a few sites. And so everything I learned about the business, I learned by doing those plugins. And, you know, over time, you come to have a skill with it. But I mean, even today, I still don't sit here and say, wow, I have a passion about WordPress. I want to be part of the community. I want to contribute to open source. I don't, it's not me. It's not, yeah. It's not my goal. It's never been my goal. My goal was to build a business on them, and I built the business on them. And now they're kind of in maintenance mode because they can run themselves more or less with the few staff that I've got. And that was fine. That's totally what I needed there. So I don't have an exit criteria because they are sustaining themselves in a place where I don't have to give them a lot of attention, and they still kick me back some cash. And that was the sole goal I ever had with those things in the first place.
Yeah. So. And I think that's a very underrated asset to have in your kind of business life, is to have something that pays the bills or brings in money or whatever to allow you to do something else. Because I kind of similarly, I have the same thing with Podcast Motor. And Podcast Motor takes very little of my time, but it pays all of our bills to let me focus my time and energy and reinvest money into Castos. If you don't have that, if you're banking on this new thing that you're building to pay your bills and all this other stuff, and you're just starting out, the pressure is really high, and the time it's going to take, I think, is really long. But yeah, I mean, if you don't have, I guess what I'm saying is there is definitely a place for a boring business that you're not passionate about, because some of them are really, really, really good businesses. And they let you, if they're boring businesses, they let you free up that mental space to go do other stuff that's exciting and maybe has that, you know, bigger potential, or, you know, what is the term, Dave? Get your knickers in a knot or whatever? What's the term?
Get your panties in a wad.
Get your panties in
your
a wad.
Your knickers in a twist.
There you go.
Yeah, it depends. You want the American or the UK version, right?
Get your panties in a wad. Yeah. I mean, because that's like cool and important, right? Is like being jazzed about what you do. But it doesn't have to be every business, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's definitely a component to this that of the endurance. So like if you're starting a SaaS from scratch, that just takes a long fucking time. I mean, there's no way to make it happen overnight. Those that happen overnight, like the Baremetrics of the world, these are absolutely the edge cases, the exceptions, the outliers. Those that have built, you know, solid SaaS businesses, the vast majority are going to take time. But at the same time, you know, either they are doing stuff on the side where they're like bootstrapping with some freelancing on the side. I'm pretty sure that's how Basecamp got started. And if you need to have that side thing to kind of keep it going, you should also have a side criteria to say, if this isn't working by this time, by these metrics, then I should revisit this and decide if this is what I want to continue dumping my time and energy into. And maybe you can look at that and say, look, I've made a huge amount of progress and I'm on the cusp of something. I haven't quite hit my metrics, but at least it gives you that point to say, is this the right thing for me now? Should I keep going with it? And that's the thing that I think Nathan's article really lacked.
Some sort of check-in metric or framework or something. Well, yeah, I mean, it would be interesting to hear from folks, you know, what they think about this idea of kind of persisting and grinding it out, you know, if it's worked or if it hasn't. Shoot us a message, podcast@roguestartups.com. And if you're enjoying the show, share it with somebody that you think would enjoy it as well. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.